ready to wake up, you're going to wake up. And if you're not ready, you're going to stay pretending that you're just a little, poor little me.
Soldiers, don't fight for slavery, fight for liberty. In the 17th chapter of St. Luke it is written, the kingdom of God is within man, not one man nor a group of men, but in all men, in you. You, the people, have the power.
The world is like a ride at an amusement park. And when you choose to go on it, you think it's real, because that's how powerful our minds are.
Everybody is I. You all know you are you. And wheresoever beings exist throughout all galaxies, it doesn't make any difference. You are all of them. And when they come into being, that's you coming into being.
Yo, 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 people, how's it going? Hope you're all doing well wherever you are in the world. And Happy New Year as well. And I hope you all had a great Christmas. And the new year is an interesting one for me. Time, it really does highlight the aspect of time for me. Time really is a funny one. I know that it is, I really do feel that it is just a made-up construct. But at the same time, time drives our civilization. It drives our sort of our mindset on a daily basis. It dictates a lot of time. It dictates our patterns and the things that we do. It even reminds us from a mortality perspective of nothing is permanent and everything's constantly changing and ever rearranging. It really does do that. And it gives us this aspect that the civilization as a general is moving forward and it's moving fast. And I do feel that sometimes every single time in a new year comes around the corner, we look back at the previous year and ask the question, where did that time go? And time really is, it's ever changing, it's ever present, it's beautiful at the same time, but it really does give us a constant reminder that this thing that we're on, whatever it is, really is moving at a pace, and it really is. And I think that's the only benefit of time. It makes you realize that life is too short and we have to live every single moment that's in front of us right now. So some really crazy things have been going on, guys. Hasn't been a podcast for the last 2 weeks. As you know, I've spoke about in a previous episode of Observing My Thoughts about this experience that I've been going through, and it clearly is a Kundalini awakening. I'm definitely going to talk more about that in the next Observing My Thoughts. That will be out next week, maybe probably Monday, so a few days from this coming out now. So there'll definitely be two podcasts out, if not three, over the next week and a half. So the podcast is back as normal. Like I said, took two weeks off. I really needed to sit with this thing and really give my time to be present with what is going on through the Kundalini awakening. So I'm going to definitely do an Observing My Thoughts about that anyway. Over the last few weeks as well, guys, I've been doing a lot of Wim Hof method. I really love that. I just wanted to give you guys a little bit of a heads up that on Wim Hof's YouTube channel, if you type in Wim Hof breathing technique, there really is a really incredible breathing little video on his channel, and it really does demonstrate on the aspect of when you should be breathing and when you should be taking oxygen in the holds and how long you should hold for. And it really is a great diagram. It gives you a sort of like a pentagon that sort of moves inwards and outwards as in repetition with your own breath. So I would definitely recommend heading over to Wim Hof's YouTube channel and checking that out. I've been using it every single day. I'm setting myself a 100-day challenge, and I'm currently, I think, at about 25 days in now, and I haven't missed a day, and I'm not planning on doing so. It really is a cool thing. And over Christmas as well, guys, just to let you know, I really got someone sent us a really cool present. It was actually a didgeridoo, which is obviously originates from supposedly from Australia. Aboriginal music really is something that I've always loved, and I've always been aware of the musical instrument a didgeridoo, if you want to call it that. And so over the next few weeks, I'm starting to learn that. It really is humbling when you pick up something new. It really is great to try something new as much as you can in your life. And the didgeridoo for me is definitely something that I've never done before. It looks a lot easier than it actually is to play. The first day I picked it up, it sounded like I was making some sort of squelchy fart noise into it. It really does take a lot of time and a lot of practice and a lot of skill to actually be able to do the didgeridoo. I'm sort of getting there a bit more now, so hopefully in the near future, if you're lucky, I might play the podcast out, maybe an observe my thoughts, play some tunes, if you're going to call them that, on the didgeridoo anyway, to play the podcast out. So anyway, this week on the podcast is a really awesome conversation. I headed down to the middle of the UK to record this one. This was with a girl called Jade Shaw. She really is a cool person. I actually met up with her at the premiere of her documentary, which is called Inside Out. She invited me down to go to the premiere of this thing. It really was cool. It was a cool documentary. As you will hear in this, Jade mentions towards the end, the documentary, which is called Inside Out, will be available on YouTube for free in the near future. It really is a cool one. I would also recommend, if you can, she's also doing a few more premieres in London. If you're in that area, definitely check that out, because it really was a cool documentary about the realms of the outer body experience. And what I loved about the documentary was that I really, really felt some of the people in there, there was a mixture of sort of people who's been on this podcast, like Tom Campbell, Anthony Peake, but at the same time, there was also a lot of normal people who have been having these experiences, who work normal jobs and stuff. And I really thought their perspective was really interesting and really intriguing and quite funny as well. So I definitely recommend checking that out. So anyway, in this podcast, we talk about the outer body experience, the astral projection. Jade is an outer body and astral projection teacher. So we dive into this and so much more. This really is a cool conversation. It goes deep down the rabbit hole as always. And we talk about everything about our outer body experience and everything else in between. So I know you're going to love this conversation anyway. There's nothing more to say on that. If you can find it in your heart, check out the Patreon page. As always, it is the best way to support the podcast. Also, check out the Ascend Podcast Retreat. There are still a couple of spaces left available for that. And I think that is all, guys. So anyway, enjoy this podcast with Jade Shaw, where we talk about the astral planes and the outer body experience. And keep an eye out in a few days' time for my observing my thoughts, where I'm going to dive into some of the magical, scary, and wonderful things that have been going on in the last 2 weeks. So anyway, enjoy this podcast for now, and I'll catch you in a few days' time. Peace out, people. Trying to think, we'll jump in now, but I'm just trying to think of the sort of the best place to start the podcast, because I've looked into your work and there's so many different areas I know that we can take this conversation. And I know that you, obviously, one of your main topics is the outer body experience. But the outer body experience itself, as you know, it's connected to many different topics as well. But to start this off, the first place I wanted to take this, because today obviously we're the place that we're in today, this is going to be a sort of, it's where your documentary is taking place. And what I know of your documentary is it's all about sort of questioning the bigger questions of consciousness and things like that. And I mean, if we look at mainstream sort of science now, mainstream science says that consciousness is confined to the brain and consciousness is fundamental to the brain. But I know through looking at your work, I know that you don't sort of, you're not in that camp, you're in the sort of the you're in the you have the perspective that it could be, the possibility that it could be more. Was there any experience in your life that sort of that made you question the sort of the basic fundamental understanding that science has of consciousness?
So one of the experiences that I've had that made me question whether consciousness is more than the brain and more than the body is when I had an out of body experience and I turned around and looked back at my physical body. And I remember it because when I turned around and I saw it, it reminded me of those dolls that you use in CPR, where you try and practice CPR on them. So a little bit kind of mannequin-like, but it was just lying on the bed breathing. And I was a little bit scared, to be honest. So I was like, how am I over there, but I'm here? And also, why am I so scared to see myself? And I think it was because, well, basically, when I saw myself, it made me realize, you know, I've self-identified with my physical body for my entire life. So then when I've looked back at it, it's made me realize, if I am potentially not limited to my physical body, perhaps there are other areas of my life that I'm not limited to either. In fact, maybe they are no limitations, just possibilities. And I always say with this one, it reminds me of the overview effect. So the overview effect is when astronauts are in space and they look back at the Earth like a pale blue tiny dot in the distance, and they have a cognitive shift of awareness. They might feel expansiveness, a sense of interconnectedness, and national identification with national boundaries kind of dropped. So in the same way, when we look back at our physical body, our self-perception changes. And just for me, that was one of the biggest learning curves. And it's like, well, why is that so important? Why is looking back at our physical body and potentially seeing that we are more than our physical body so important? And I think it's because, you know, most of our suffering is linked with the physical body. When our physical body is injured, we suffer. When our sense of self is insulted, we suffer. And it's because, you know, this is all we think we are, a body and a sense of self. So when we have an out-of-body experience, we realize that we are more than matter and we are more than mind, more than our limited sense of self. And I think that this innate knowing can change everything.
Yeah, definitely, I agree with that. I mean, it has done in my life as well. I mean, if I can think back to all the different experiences that I had, like you said, I think when you're a lot younger, you're brought up with this sort of this perspective and point of view that, like you said, you're just your body, you're nothing else. But then it goes even deeper than that, because people say that you're either your religion, your job, you're even all these different boxes that society says that you are. And I think sometimes people don't have that overlooked perspective, like you said, of what I truly am. But I think when you do start to know who you truly are more, I think them attachments, the false boxes that we're put in, start to dissolve and start to sort of fall away. Do you, an area I actually want to ask you as well, I've done a podcast in the past about out-of-body experience, and many people can't differentiate between sort of the out-of-body experience versus lucid dreaming. Yeah. Could you just break that down? Because I think that's a good perspective before we do start diving too deep.
Yeah, definitely. So to look at what an out-of-body experience is and what a lucid dream is, we have to define the two. So, and that depends what perspective you look at both of them with. So I'm going to kind of take a more psychological approach. So if a lucid dream is a dream in which we know we are dreaming, so we have a lucid dream, we wake up, we go, oh my God, I'm dreaming. The lucid dreamer is in REM brain state. So they're asleep in bed, they're in REM brain state. Sometimes we have them in deeper states, but it's usually REM. And they typically accept they're dreaming. They go, oh my God, I'm in a dream. An out-of-body experience can happen in any brain state. We can be wide awake. We don't even have to be asleep to have an out-of-body experience. And there's usually a feeling of separation, so that's the first definition, sense of exit, leaving the body, feels very viscerally real. And then our self-awareness is in a separate place to our physical body, or seems to be, and we can travel to different places. And then there's kind of a crash landing, often reported, when we come back to the body. So, and also it's reported as being realer than real. So they'll say it was realer than real, as real, or realer than this reality. So we can see also that they're neurologically slightly different, but also subjectively that they're different as well. So that's the first thing. Then there are five differences, I think. So I'm just going to whiz through them just for time. So the first one is the neurological brain states. Lucid dream, you're asleep in bed. You can only have a lucid dream when you're asleep in bed. Out-of-body experience, you can have wide awake. For example, pregnant women can have them. We can have them as part of what I call a forced out-of-body experience, or we can spontaneously have them in a park, for example. So the other one is the vibrational state. So usually before we have an out-of-body experience, we have this feeling of movement, sensations in the body. We might hear frequency sounds. It's very can be very intense, particularly the first time. But this vibrational state happens, and then shortly the feeling of separation or leaving. In a lucid dream, we wake up and we're in the lucid dream. We don't have the vibrational state. And then the second thing is the body. So what a lot of people report is energy or a second body or a subtle body or a light body, depending on what we want to call it. So it's quite light and ghost-like. In a lucid dream, our body is the same. Sometimes we don't have a body in both a lucid dream and an out-of-body experience. We can be a floating point of awareness in both. But basically, the environment feels pretty much the same. And also with a lucid dream, you can affect the environment. So I could say, Hawaii beach behind me now, and I turn around, there's a beach. In an OBE, you can't really do that. And I think that's because we are beyond our own unconscious mind. But to make this maybe a little bit more easier to think about, I always say that lucid dream is like we are in the computer over our own mind. We have access to the hard drive, the files, and the memory. And an out-of-body experience is like we are in the internet. We can connect with the collective consciousness. We can go to all different sites, and we can have encounters with other computers. And even though in a lucid dream, sometimes it might feel like we can download data from the internet into our computer, doesn't mean they're the same phenomena. But what's super interesting is the boundaries of the computer, I don't think, are rigid or static. So I think that there's a flexibility to jump from the lucid dream space into an out-of-body experience. So they are closely linked, if we're talking about out-of-body experiences from sleep, but they're not the same phenomena. Both equally amazing, though.
Yeah, definitely. And very well put as well. That's probably the best way I've ever heard it put as well, because a lot of people do get confused on the topic of to differentiate between the two, and that was very well put, by the way. Another area that I want to touch on was I wanted to just sort of dive in deep straight away and ask you a big question.
Okay, let's do it.
Of what is the sort of the what do you think is the purpose of the out-of-body experience?
Yes. Okay, so this is what I think the out-of-body experience purpose is. Bearing in mind this is my current opinion, which may change as I grow myself. So I think they're for survival and for evolutionary purposes. So there are three different types of out-of-body experience. Spontaneous, that happen at random without us knowing, unexpected, sometimes in meditation, sometimes when we're very deeply relaxed, for example. And then self-initiated out-of-body experiences, which a lot of traditions bring on in order to do various things to help with self-growth or the community. And then the third one is a forced out-of-body experience. And to be honest, this is what most people will probably have heard of, which is a near-death experience, which has an out-of-body experience as one of the components, usually one of the first components of a near-death experience. But just because it's forced, it doesn't have to be a near-death experience. For example, somebody could be on stage and get stage fright and suddenly find themselves out their physical body and then shoot back in. Forced ones are usually short-lived. It's the same with women that are pregnant and in labor, they can come out and go back in. So this is the survival-based ones. But then, with my research, which is from my master's degree, I've been looking at the transformative effects of spontaneous ones. So what happens? Why do they come about? Why do we suddenly have a spontaneous one? And it seems to be that they're evolutionary. So when people have a spontaneous one, the insight or the realization or the guidance or the message of that content affects their life in some way. And it's usually linked with a current situation or one that is about to unfold. So what they can do from that is then use that to change their life or something will transform. And I looked at 10 people, and in every 10 cases, apart from two, which were different OBEs, they had this sense of change and shift. I can tell a little story if you'd like.
Yeah, go ahead. Honestly, go ahead.
So one of my case studies called Paul, who's in the documentary, he had an out-of-body experience, and he said, and I quote, "When I came back from that, it felt like I had just met God. Yeah, fearless. I had this epiphany that I could do anything with my life." And when he came back from that, he, let me rewind to school. So when he was at school, he dropped out. He had kind of shame and guilt around academia. He was a musician. He led a bit of a rock and roll lifestyle. But he had quite a negative experience of education. After his out-of-body experience, he decided to go and do a master's degree in philosophy from Edinburgh, which he has now got, and he's just enrolled to do his PhD at Greenwich University. Now, I'm not saying that the OBE was the reason for that, but it certainly impacted and was the catalyst to help that come into fruition. Yeah, for sure.
Like sort of like self-realization. That's what I've noticed in general. I mean, it's something I wanted to ask you actually, because it seems to be not just, I mean, I think, I know we're talking about the out-of-body experience here, but like I said, when I first started the podcast, I said the out-of-body experience sort of is linked to many different areas. And I think you can obviously take psychedelics, you can do just meditate in your normal practice. Sometimes you can even do yoga, or just whatever practice it is, whether it's lucid dreaming. But it seems to be that they sort of unravel deeper aspects of the self. Who was it again? Was it, I think it was Sigmund Freud or Carl Jung or something? Anyway, who talks about how these certain experiences sort of highlight a deeper aspect within sort of the psyche, like the human psyche, and sort of brings you face to face with deeper aspects of yourself, like traumas and things that you need to work on. Yeah. Do you find that this could be the bigger purpose of all these different practices and what they're trying to do?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I know certainly with OBEs, I talk about with the evolutionary ones lead to self-actualization, so self-realization. Mm-hmm. And I definitely agree with that. In fact, in one of my workshops, I talk about shadow work, which is purposely harnessing the out-of-body experience state to directly have an intention to tap into these deeper aspects of ourself and bring them to the surface. So we have a meaningful motivation of why we do it in order to find out deeper aspects about our things that can help us with our full potential and our life and our way forward. So I definitely think that they help with self-actualization, self-realization. And that's what a lot of the spontaneous ones seem to point to.
Yeah, I mean, I think in our daily lives, I think what I've noticed a lot in my life, and I'm going through this period in the minute of my life where it seems to be like I go through these stages of, I mean, have you ever heard in the past that where masters, like great masters of the past, spiritual masters sort of quote unquote would say statements like the gift of true sight. They would say the gift of, the ability to have the gift of true sight. And in the past, I never really understood what that meant. I mean, I might not still understand it now, but with me, where the point I'm at in my life now is I get a sense that gift of true sight is the ability to sort of see maybe the patterns and the behaviors that you do in your life that aren't quite right. So even when you have a certain interaction in your daily life with somebody, the way that you treat that person, the way that you sort of, sometimes the thoughts and the patterns that you have in your mind. And what I've found is, especially through these different practices that I do, a lot lately in my life, it's been heightening a lot more. And it's been sort of, the practices themselves have been really sort of shown us deeper aspects of things that I'm not doing right. Have you had that? Has out-body experience sort of done that to you? Have you went through stages where, I mean, everything what we're doing here and the people listening to this podcast, they're all seeking the biggest questions. And I think the further you get down the line, the more you sort of stick to a practice, it starts unraveling more and more of the things that you need to change in your life. Have you found that in your life? Has it changed things in your life dramatically? Or even just the way that you see the world?
Yeah, it's definitely changed things dramatically and the way that I see the world in that. I'm laughing because if you normally tell people the way you see the world from having many out-of-body experiences, it could quite sound quite crazy. But like, basically, it's brought me closer to the dreamlike nature of reality and the illusory nature of reality and mind and our thoughts and who we think we are. And being able to tap into that in times of distress or feeling low or having a problem and realizing that there's something beyond myself and greater than me that is that I'm a part of, I suppose. Being able to be aware of that and sort of step out of my situation has helped me quite a lot, I would say. But also being able to, you're talking about true sight, being able to see things clearly beyond kind of ignorance or thought patterns or stories that we tell ourselves, being able to see where that is coming from a lot more. And I think with the out-body experience, you can directly have an encounter with that aspect of our psyche, that problem, that thing that we need help with. We can go into there and find answers from that maybe we couldn't with our ordinary perception.
How do you feel, I know sort of like more of an esoteric point of view of the out-of-body experience was that they always said that the soul was leaving the body. Do you sort of agree with that, or do you think it could be something more than that?
Yeah, it depends what you mean by soul. I don't really lean towards the old kind of spiritualist term of the spirit or the soul leaving. I see it more of an expansive state of consciousness. So I think our perception or an aspect of our self-awareness is shifting beyond the physical body. But then it also depends on what environment it's shifting into. So it's not always objective environment. Most people think you come out of your body and you're in your room and you go out the window and you do something, and you can. But sometimes there's a spectrum of environments, and some of them are more subjective and part of our own mind, and then some of them seem to be beyond the boundaries of our own mind. And this is what fascinates me. Where does our sense of self stop and the wider world begin? Where is that line, and does that line even exist? So that's what really fascinates me.
How deep have you gone with that?
Oh, good question. Oh my God. I'm still going deep. Yeah. I haven't got to the end. I'm still exploring it. But I definitely have had glimpses of non-duality. So maybe neither of what I said is true in the first place.
Yeah,
or paradoxically, maybe both they exist at the same time. We just see them in a dualistic way because we're in the human condition. Who knows?
Yeah, definitely. Do you think it's interesting, because something that I've noticed when I... Because for me, obviously, I'm more of a vivid lucid dreamer, so I have a lot of lucid dreams. And for me, I think sometimes the ability to tap into these states, I think the general public as well find it hard on many occasions to be able to have... I know you come across certain people, I think you're one of these as well, who has sort of this ability to maybe just turn the tap on when they want. But I think the general public, they don't really have that... They haven't, because it takes a lot of work, and I think that's exactly what how it should be. Just like whatever you do in life, you have to sort of put the work in to get what you want to do, and it goes for the same for spirituality as well. And practices are sort of they're not easy states to get into. And I had sort of a theory that I wanted to sort of bring to you, ask your thoughts on it, see if you thought this, because I remember I think it was Anthony Peake we had on the podcast, and he was talking about how, like, as you know, I was saying before about the gift of true sight and trying to find deeper wisdom and deeper knowledge about the universe. I think Anthony Peake told a story on the podcast once where he had this example of this anthropologist called Benny Shannon. I don't know if you ever heard this story before. No. It's a really beautiful story, though. When he says, I'll cut it short basically, but what he said is this guy called Benny Shannon went around all the best indigenous shamans in the world, and he was sort of asking them the biggest questions of the universe, how to find the biggest questions of the universe, how to find the answers. And he said he went to yogi masters, shamans, and he said nobody could give him the answer. And then one day he went to an ice cream salesman, and the ice cream salesman basically just turned around and said, well, if you want to find the secrets of the universe, have a think about where would you find them. And the guy said, well, where would they be, on the moon? He said, no, because eventually unlawful men would get to the moon and they would find the secrets of the universe. And he says, right, well, what about the ocean? He says, no, because eventually unlawful men would get to the bottom of the ocean and find the secrets of the universe. And then he says, but however, the only place that you'd be able to hide the secrets of the universe would be embed them inside the human self, so that only when people who deserve to have the ability to find them will come upon them and find them.
Wow.
And I thought that was an interesting concept.
That's amazing. Yeah, I love that.
But I do think that, I don't know about you, but sometimes in life, I mean, the more that we do seek and you do your practice about body experience, I think it does... To a sense, it does feel like these things are all this knowledge and all these things are inside of us. I mean, in our day-to-day lives, I think we look outside of ourselves for answers. But I think, as you know, as you do these practices, you more and more you seek, you find that they are within us all.
Yeah. No, definitely, I'd agree with that. Yeah.
I was going to ask you as well. Do you feel that like we were talking before about how the ability of the outer body experience, lucid dreaming and things like that, to sort of show us deeper aspects of ourselves. If that is the case and sort of these practices are trying to show us deeper aspects of ourselves, what do you feel is the purpose of consciousness with that? Like, what is consciousness trying to do? If consciousness is trying to use these practices to show us deeper aspects of ourselves, what do you feel is the... Why is it doing that?
That's a massive question. I am definitely not qualified to answer that. For one thing, I mean, I really am drawn to Jung's idea of individuation and Maslow's self-actualization. So this sense of we are trying to peel back the layers of conditioning that have built up over the years through beliefs, thought process, stories we've been told, culture, religion, society, and kind of peeling these away to kind of our authentic self, and then becoming kind of aligned with our authentic self. But then I'm saying self, perhaps there is something beyond that self. And that's why I like the, I think we get a lot of wisdom from transpersonal experiences. So we're going beyond and through the self in order to get that wisdom. Because then we step out of our own way. Our self kind of moves to the side. We tap into something bigger. And then we are able to connect with what that is. And I think in terms of when you're talking about consciousness, why does it seem to be able to do that? Well, we're assuming it's doing that. Maybe it's not doing that. That there's an assumption by us as humans trying to make sense. Well, consciousness seems to be trying to give us these experiences. Why? Maybe we just thinking of it from a different viewpoint. Maybe it's not trying to do anything. It's just being as it is, and we're just noticing it in certain ways, and we're making it meaningful. Because I do believe, like, nothing has meaning at all, and yet everything has meaning as well, because we give everything meaning that doesn't have meaning. This table doesn't have meaning, but we give it meaning. It's a table. So I just think sometimes a way in which we might try and make sense of our experiences largely depicts then what we find. And I don't know if there is anything to find. Maybe there's treasure and no treasure at the same time.
Yeah, I love that. That's beautiful, by the way.
Who knows?
That's really beautiful, by the way. Something I wanted to ask you as well is, because a lot of people who listen to these podcasts are people who are, they're doing the work, they're sort of doing the meditation, they're looking at out-of-body experience, they're looking at lucid dreaming and stuff. Have you got any sort of maybe tips for somebody who is maybe on that path, who is sort of now looking into them practices, to sort of maybe some sort of frame of mind, a type of frame of mind that they maybe have to sort of try and understand, something they have to understand, or a type of maybe just a tip where they can sort of explore the consciousness that you feel has very been important in your life maybe as well?
So the first thing is, everyone has this potential. It's not for special people. It's not for people, monks and nuns who live in caves. Everybody can do this, and we all have this potential. That's the first thing, definitely. Just want to hit that home. Mm-hmm. But as a little practical tip, I use sleep states. So I use the hypnagogic and the hypnopompic in order to induce out-of-body experiences or drop into lucid dreaming. So I think conscious sleeping or yoga nidra can really help. But as a little tip, something to do when we go to sleep tonight, if we can just watch what is happening behind our eyes and see how long we can focus for. So keeping it really simple, we're in bed, we're asleep, or we're falling asleep, what can we see behind our eyes? Is there images, colors, patterns? Do we hear voices? Do we just black out? And it doesn't matter if we just black out. Some we do at first. So what can we see? And then see how long you can hold that attention for each night. And then this is the hypnagogic mindfulness that I teach. And then just see what starts to happen.
Before as well, you made a point as well. You were talking about how the out-of-body experience can be induced by different sort of states of being. I wanted to ask you, you said something before about how, I think you used the example of, say, if a woman's pregnant or something like that, that these states can be induced. Do you think it's sort of maybe traumatic events can sort of induce these different states of consciousness within people?
Yeah, I think traumatic events can bring on out-of-body experiences. It's what I called a forced out-of-body experience. And it's basically because out-of-body experiences can happen in any altered state. And, you know, when we go into an anxiety attack, it's an altered state. We shift from our ordinary everyday perception into a heightened sensory perception. So we can effectively shift from one then. This is why I think out-body experiences are survival-based. This is an example, but also evolutionary-based, where they can be spontaneous and respond to a psychological crisis or a call from the psyche, from the soul, to self-actualize and give us guidance about an area in our life.
Mm-hmm. It's funny because I'm sure it was Jordan Peterson was talking about how, like, the sense what you were saying, how certain dramatic events in our life can sort of cause dramatic changes within our, not just our from a mental point of view, but maybe from like a psychological point of view, even in terms of consciousness, of how certain dramatic events, because I've seen this with certain people around myself who have sort of maybe haven't been people who have been doing sort of research and an out-of-body experience, or people who haven't even been doing, even looking after the bodies in terms of eating healthy food, then all of a sudden a dramatic event happens that's traumatic in the life, and it sort of forces their consciousness to think and analyze life in a different way. Mm. So I mean, maybe there is something like people say there is a bigger purpose to the universe, and sometimes the universe does these little things where it makes you reevaluate your lives in certain directions. I mean, who we don't know what this is. Who knows what is going on? There was something else I wanted to ask before about the out of body experience in particular. Do you find that you have to sort of try and clear your beliefs to be open-minded in the realms of the out-of-body experience?
Definitely, 100%. And this is one of the things I have to work with participants that come to my workshops, because a lot of limiting beliefs, particularly around fears and blocks, just get in the way. And this is me as well, and we all have it, and it's completely natural, but they do get in the way. And I think that working with where those beliefs are coming from and the root cause, which we can do with the out-of-body experience itself, we can explore that, but also we can do that as self-development work before the practice, so that we can see clearly when we do go out. I mean, I teach a technique called the RAIN technique, which is popularized by mindfulness teacher Tara Brach. So this is how we approach environments in an out-of-body experience. And R is recognize, just recognize where we are. A is accept, so accept where we are. If we're in a dark place, we might not want to accept that we're in a dark place, but just to be with that place. And acceptance doesn't mean endorse. We don't have to like being there, but we can accept being there. And then I is investigate with intimate attention. So I'm here in the out-of-body experience. I'm looking at the table. Oh, there's a gentleman here. Oh, there's lights. So intimate details. This also helps with recall later on, which is really important. And then N is non-identification. So not self-attaching and self-identifying through beliefs, usually, to the situation. Oh, I've come out. I'm in an out-of-body experience. It's light. It's heavenly. I must be an enlightened master. Or, oh, I'm in a really dark place. Ooh, I don't like this. It's scary. Maybe I'm bad. Maybe I've done something wrong. Maybe I'm in hell. You can see where the beliefs come in and then shape the way the people are seeing it. There could be some gold, some treasure in these out-of-body experiences that we're completely missing because we panic and we have fear and we turn away from it. We don't want to look. We just resist. But actually, if we can step into that, that's where the gems are, I think.
Yeah, I like before when you were saying about the becoming a spiritual master, because sometimes I have these spontaneous experiences of, like, whether it's a lucid dream or something, and I come out just thinking I'm sort of some sort of Buddha or something, like I can heal everyone, I'm going to heal the world here, I'm going to show everyone how to do it. Do you think as well, this is what I've realized within the sort of the astral world, is that it's very thought-based, but I also find as well that it seems to be that the reality that we're in now is also thought-based as well. Do you find that as well?
So in an out-of-body experience, it's usually a thought-responsive environment to a degree, where we have a thought and that takes us to a certain place, or it shapes where we then go. But then in some of the more objective environments, like if we come out on what some people would call the physical plane, it isn't as thought responsive. So this is what I was talking about. There's a spectrum between environments that are more subjective and more objective. But I certainly feel like when people talk of, the spirit realm, the afterlife, I'm like, we're just looking at that from the perspective of our human conditioning. Say we die and we go into the afterlife, that then becomes our normality. Who's not to say that the afterlife is as real as is now? How do we know we're not dead and in the afterlife right this second?
Yeah.
How would you know?
You wouldn't.
You wouldn't. So this is what I'm talking about, why perspectives and seeing where we're looking from and the belief systems that we talk about is really important.
Yeah, I mean, well, you made a very good point there, because we really don't know anything. And I mean, I think you have to try, and I think you'll know this as well. I mean, whatever, especially when it comes to doing practices, I think you have to try and empty your sort of cup, because I mean, what was the famous analogy of where, like, a yogi master met somebody and he said, how can I give you any more information if your cup's completely full? So that's why you need to sort of, in a way, empty yourself every single, it sound, doesn't sound right that, but empty yourself on many occasions as you can, sort of leave your mind open to new perspectives and new ideas. And it is hard to do that, because I think, like I said before, even sometimes on the journey when you have a lucid dream, you think that, oh, I'm the master now, I know everything. And I've been guilty of that many times. But the more you do the practice, you will be humbled no matter what. You really mm-hmm. will. I wanted to ask you the question, what are some things that you're experimenting with now in the sort of the outer body, with the outer body experience? What sort of things are you trying to focus on?
What I'm experimenting with now is actually how to transition from the lucid dream state into an out-of-body experience and what that looks like. So I have about 5 techniques that I teach on my weekend workshop in order to do that. But it's still very much early research, because there's not many people who can have lucid dreams and have out-of-body experience. Usually it's one or the other, or they've had a little experience of one and not much maybe of the other. So how can we do that? What does that look like? What are the commonalities? What do a range of different people with different backgrounds all encounter when they feel like they've transcended from a lucid dream to an out-of-body experience? So I'm exploring those environments and that connection between the two at the moment.
And that is very advanced as well. That is some deep stuff there. On a more basic level, is there any practices or tips that you could give to somebody to maybe sort of start, so they can start trying to sort of have their own out of body experience? Basically, is there any sort of a mantra or a practice that you feel that a lot of people could do?
Let me just think, because it's usually you need to do a few things rather than one thing. I could teach an exit technique. Mm. So if you wake up in the middle of the night and you are in that liminal space between wakefulness and sleep, but you're not quite in either, see if you can imagine rocking your body from side to side. So like you're rolling, but you don't actually move your real physical body. You want to imagine it. So you start imagining, and at some point it should feel like you are actually moving, to the point where you'll think, oh my God, am I actually moving? And then when you start to feel that, rock even further and take it more, and use the weight and the motion and the senses to then suddenly roll out off to the side. This is a really well-known out-of-body experience exit technique. And there's a test you can do for this called the phantom limb test. If you lift up your arm or you lift up your knee and it feels like it's actually moving, but you know your physical body isn't moving, then you know you're ready to do an exit effectively.
Is there anything, let's say if somebody does get in the position, because I'm the same, especially for lucid dream, and I know you use lucid dream as an example because that's sort of what I do the most. But if they get in a position where they do sort of have success with this and they do have an out-body experience, is there any sort of thing, how could someone be prepared mentally? What things should they be doing once they realize that they are having an out-of-body experience in that realm, whatever you want to call it? Is there any sort of tips that they have to do mentally whilst in there?
If you do get out of your physical body and you're in your room and it's unexpected and you don't know what to do, do not think of your physical body. Try and remain calm emotionally. If you get too excited or too fearful, you'll just go back. So think of the window or a place far away. William Buhlmann says to say in your awareness, door now. So then you shift your awareness to the door and you should travel to the door. So to take your senses away from your physical body. What I usually do before we have an OBE is set an intention. So we want to have an intention of, what do I want to do? Where are they going to go? What are they going to see? Who do they want to meet? What do they want to connect with? And then the second thing, which is probably the secret to most successes, is having a meaningful motivation. So why do we want to do or have an out-of-body experience in the first place? And if this is really meaningful, like really heart-based, heart-centered, I want to connect with my dead father in order to heal my grief. That would be an intention, to meet my father. What is the reason? To heal my grief. Doesn't have to be as deep as that. You can just be, I just want to fly and see where I can go and what I can do, because it's important to be fun and play. But having the meaningful motivation beforehand will also help us to actually have an out-of-body experience, because it gets the universe on side, it gets the higher self on side, because you've got a good reason to be doing it.
Yeah, definitely. Something that a little tip that I've learned, and I'd love to see your opinion on this if you've ever done this, but basically, in general, just in terms of sort of trying to make it an importance to the mind that this practice is something that is important to the self. Because I think you have to try and do that with whatever practice you do. It's about trying to show the subconscious mind that this is important, that you want to pay more attention to it. And even just a simple act of writing things down, like say like a mantra or something, just constantly writing the same mantra down again and again and again. Or even the sense of, say if you have an out-of-body experience, after the out-of-body experience that you have, write down the event, what's happened, unfolded, write down a piece of paper. It creates sort of like an unconscious trigger in your mind that this event is something that is important in my life. Have you ever, do you think that something like that would maybe be good?
Yeah, definitely. So I ask people to write down, I take a little bit, which I've stolen from the Monroe Institute, because it really resonates with me, which is, I am more than my physical body. So that's what Robert Monroe would say. Yeah. So I say, I am more than my physical body, I can easily astral project. I am more than my physical body, I can easily astral project. And so as we're falling asleep, I am more than my physical body, I can easily astral project. Now, this is a tricky one, though, because if you don't believe you can easily astral project, it might rub against the possibility of it to happen. So you can change your words, and you can also add your motivation in as well. I am more than my physical body, I can easily astral project. I wish to astral project in order to meet my dead father and heal my grief.
Yeah, I love that. Is there any question maybe I didn't ask you in terms of out of body experience? Something that maybe an area of interest that's something that you're really interested in at the moment?
Death.
Yeah. Oh wow. I should have said that at the start of the podcast.
So one of the biggest benefits, I think, from having an out of body experience, especially a powerful one, is the person then having a decreased fear of death. So they seem to lose death anxiety. Yeah. Dying and suffering, yeah, we've all still got a bit of that, but the actual moment of death seems to dissipate. And this is what every single one of my 10 case studies have said, and most people that have had a powerful OBE believe that in some shape or form, when their physical body dies, that their consciousness, spirit, soul, psyche, whatever we want to call it, goes somewhere. Who knows where, but that it goes on. And I think this is so, so important in the Western world, because our approach to death and talking about it is not very good. It's not very beneficial. So I think having these experiences can help us approach death in a more healthy manner, and also with less regrets, maybe, because by talking about and thinking about death, it makes us have less regrets, because we step into more of our self, our authentic self. So by having out-of-body experiences, they can make us come into accepting death more. And you know, they do say that the fear of death unconsciously underpins a lot of the fears that we have in life, because it's the ultimate fear of change. And as humans, we're creatures of habit, we don't like to change. So by releasing the fear of death, it kind of has a domino effect on other fears in our life, and they can fall away, like Paul's fear of education. And there was another one of a lady's fear of stepping into her purpose just fell away, and they were able to move into it. But in terms of death, I think if people can be less afraid of dying, then we can embrace it, that moment of death, with less regret, more acceptance, and even joy. You know, in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, they practice out-of-body experiences in order to prepare for the moment of death, so that we can meet death with joy and with compassion, and leave from that place. They believe the last thought that we have is really important. So that thought to be joyful or compassion or loving. And I think that's just nice anyway. If we're going to pass over, let's just pass over in a, you know, state of love or joy or restfulness.
Yeah. And it's like I said before as well, it seems to be like that the practices themselves, or consciousness itself, is trying to maybe show us that. It's trying to show us that you have to be prepared for whatever's next. I mean, that's what I feel with lucid dreaming. I mean, it feels like it's some sort of, not just lucid dream, I'm using that as an example, but it feels like some sort of school. Just like life in general seems like some sort of school, preparing us for death in general anyway. Yeah. So I think why wouldn't we, as a civilization, I mean, not many people really even ask and really ask themselves what does happen. What happens when we die, and why? What is the importance of getting prepared for something like that? We just sort of hide away from them questions, don't we? In general, just to sort of wrap this up as well, I wanted for you to highlight the the documentary that we're at today. Like, could you just describe what it is, because and how people can, I mean, can people access it after the sort of, I know we're at the premiere now of it, but is there any, can people access it at a later date and stuff as well?
Yeah, so the documentary is called Insight Out, The Transformative Effects of Out-of-Body Experiences. And it's kind of a short documentary that's the accumulation of my master's degree research on out-of-body experiences and also going around the world and putting down people's real-life stories and also asking experts from different backgrounds what they thought. And there'll be showings next year in 2020 throughout London mainly. And then it may be on YouTube later on in the year for free.
Cool. So I think people have got to check that out for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I think there is a little bit in it that's on near-death experiences. So just because out-of-body experiences are very closely related, I think if anyone's ever lost anyone, I just think it's so important to see, like, so much so that I really want to take it into hospices for people to just watch, because you can be quite transformed just by witnessing other people's, and hearing other people's stories can be really healing. Yeah. So I think that's very important.
Yeah, I think it's cool as well. There's a lot of people in it. What I noticed is who's been on the podcast as well. So people want to,
yeah.
I've noticed Tom Campbell's in it as well.
Yeah.
Anthony Peake as well. So they obviously, and there are a lot of people who listen to this podcast. They're some of the sort of the favorite guests as well. So I think people's definitely got to check it out.
Yeah, yeah. We've got a Tibetan Buddhist, a Mexican shaman, a consciousness researcher, near-death experience researcher who spent 4 years doing one of the world's biggest near-death researches. And Eben Alexander, who's a neurosurgeon, who wrote Proof of Heaven. So there's a good bunch of people in there.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much for joining us on the
podcast. Thank you for having me.
Really cool. Thank you. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. And I just wanted to say, guys, as well, that I really do have so much gratitude for all you beautiful people out there who tune in these conversations every single week. Really, honestly, so much gratitude, and so humbling how amazing this community is. I mean, you guys reach out to me on many different occasions. It's not always about reaching out, as I know there's other people out there who don't feel inclined to do that, but just the sheer audience out there, the type of interactions that I'm having with you guys, that it just really gives me so much hope that there is some amazing people out there, and people like-minded like myself. Because as you know, on this journey, it sometimes is hard to find people who are engaging in these topics, people who are sort of on the same energy frequency as yourself. And it really is beautiful. I mean, you guys think that I'm helping you, but honestly, guys, you are helping me at the same time. So I don't really know how to describe this thing, that what this form of relationship that's going on between me and you, the listener. But whatever it is, it's beautiful. I'm going to keep doing it for as long as I can. It's just humbling. That's all I want to say anyway. So thank you so much for listening to the podcast. If you can, find it in your heart, support the podcast through the Patreon page. Any amount, honestly, guys, really is amazing. And I'll be forever grateful. And it just helps me to keep doing what I'm doing. So anyway, thank you so much, as always. And just to play this podcast out, actually, before I say that, just want to mention that in a few days' time, I'll be recording another episode of Observing My Thoughts. It really is going to be a wild and wacky one, and talk about some of the scary yet beautiful things that have been going on. So anyway, just to play this podcast out, I'm going to play a song by an up-and-coming UK artist. The song is called Divide and Conquer by an artist called Josh Ryan. I'm sure you will relate. So peace out, people.
Yo. All the kids on the social media but antisocial, screwing up my face while I'm working out the total. Like, how the fuck do you expect a man to buy a house with that wage that he's on? We're getting robbed by our locals. Now fuck that, we're getting stuck in a trap. You get a loan for a house and then you're paying it back for like the rest of your life. No, it's the end of your life. I know your money's in them bricks where you're laying that path on the front lawn. Government's gun drawn, you even have to put it down in ink when your son's born. They've got it unlocked, taking our money, you're much more. Cause they figured a way that they can legally push fraud, and that's in the way that they'll go slammers, cause they ain't got no manners. Through the media and fear of punishment programming, they say we obey like without and we won't manage. But the irony's the opposite, baby, we hold damage. That's why they divide and they conquer. Cause they know as a whole we are stronger. Trying to take a man for a plunker, and now they're praying that it holds a little longer. Cause they can see that now we're waking up, and if you open in your mouth, just know they'll try and tape it up. But what happens when it's everybody speaking out? They ain't got a chance to make it look like it's so good.
They say everything that they do is for us. Cause they know what will happen when they lose your trust. They play a game and the game is fucked up. Cause they know
look,
what will happen when they lose
I'm
your
I'm unfit to work, so they're paying me with pennies just to help me move. But not even enough to get me healthy food. Then they wonder why my fingers in them sticky pies. I'm just out here trying to survive in this sheltered room. Feel like I got my daughter in a ghetto. These crackheads are knocking down my wall like Lego. But when I'm ringing up and asking for solutions, they don't give a f cause they ain't living in this hellhole. Knife crying through the roof round here. Like a parent in, I see the kiddies move round fear. Mental health on the high street and homelessness. They say it's nothing new round here. They got money for wars but can't feed the poor. Why you think you seen another thief flee the store? Sat begging all morning with that empty cup. But I guess nobody could reach the floor. That's why they divide then they conquer. Cause they know as a whole we are stronger. Trying to take a man for a plunker, and now they're praying that it holds a little longer. Cause they can see that now we're waking up, and if you open in your mouth just know they'll try and tape it up. But what happens when it's everybody speaking out? They ain't got a chance to make it look like it's so good.
They say everything that they do is for us. Cause they know what will happen when they lose your trust. They play a game and the game is fucked up. Cause they know what will happen when they lose your love.